Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sam Plays Golf, the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. I am Tom Mills. As always, I'm joined by Sam Williams.
Thomas, thank you.
Bruce Pleasure. Is currently playing golf. He's away.
Spain.
In Spain, doing Spanish things over there. But
it's silly season. It's the 2nd of September. Silly season is upon us.
You keep putting this on social media. What does silly season mean?
Silly season. It's like the first few weeks of December where everyone just goes mad and you go out drinking every night of December and it just gets way too much
by
the time.
Yeah, I get in December, but this is September.
And it's like the golfing equivalent. Golfing silly season. It's like all the commitments of the year seem to just get sandwiched into September and October. August is not a busy golf month. August is almost like the calm before the storm, before you get into the mania of it. There's matches, there's fixtures. I think it's probably the best time of the year for golf, September and October. It's very mild.
You get things like members guests always happen September, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of club championships as well.
We do have ours earlier in the season.
Yeah, and like it's just a busy time for events. There's a lot of clubs will have opens and various things like that. We've obviously just come back from, you know, weekend at the Cashmere Cup and the silver medal at R&D. I mean, there's just a ton of golf on, and it is silly season. Trips as well. Like, you're not going to go on a golf trip in summer holidays when the kids are off, where flights are extortionate and stuff.
Maybe. So I'll accept that. I'm not sure it deserves its own social media posts, but I'll accept that.
Well, when we're in a position where I need to get sign off on social media posts, I'll let you know. Is that all right?
Well, I've just signed you off.
Okay, okay.
I've told you off, but yeah, it's.
I don't know. Maybe it's a poor take. Maybe it's just us.
Us have got kids that feel like this.
A lot of people seem to echo the sentiment, but
they came back on social media. There's a lot of trips going on. A lot of people saying they're going Scotland and. But I think...
That was validated.
Life is silly season. We're always on tour.
Yeah, golf life's pretty crazy, isn't it? But how have you been anyway?
Since we last spoke, we've done the last pod in the biscuit mill and we've moved out. So now I no longer live there. So that's been pretty manic hence the lack of sort of podding the last sort of couple of weeks, but we've got one to catch up on, which is another episode of Sam Plays Golf. This should be a little mini micro series within Course Diaries, Sam Plays Golf.
Well, Course Diaries is increasingly becoming Sam Plays Golf because just the sheer level of apathy on yours and Bruce's part to chronicle and journal your golfing lives is lacking. I haven't got a golfing life.
That's the problem.
You're going out and playing these. You're literally playing these places all the time. But anyway, look, funnily enough, Church Stretton is not too far from where you've moved to, actually. It's a little bit out sort of...
Oh, is it not? Is it far? Is it?
It's kind of equidistant, your place, from Church Stretton, from Bromsgrove, which is near enough irrelevant for information for anyone who listens to this podcast that doesn't live in Bromsgrove or Bewdley. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of right into the sort of depths of Shropshire, which we'll come on to. But we're recording this podcast, which is, say, in my front room, which is the first time we've done that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the first time this has had a pod in it, unless you've been doing super secret pods without me. But no. I'm pretty certain this is the first time it's had a podcast in it.
No.
It's a very lovely room. It's got golf on in the background, although on silent, unlike the pilot.
Corn Ferry Tour.
Unlike the pilot where we left the sand
Ferry
on in the
Tour
background.
Corn Ferry Tour finals looks heinously difficult. We're here to do a little podcast today about Church Stretton. Maybe worth talking about how this one came about. I think I've been mentioning this course a few times to you, saying we should probably go and check this out.
Since you were very young, yeah, you've been mentioning Church Stretton quite a lot. And you also, you put up something else. By the way, I'm going to throw it out there now. Sam's code for, oh yeah, I haven't played this since I was very young is...
It's just not true. No. I've never played Church Stretton before. I'd never been. So
no, but when I say that you've been talking about it since you were very young, is code for you haven't been talking about it. But
I have been saying for weeks, we should definitely go and play Church Stretton.
Yeah.
And then I was quite curious to go, just throw some names of courses out. I seem to remember when we were in August, right at the start of August, Our club, Blackwood, had some greens treatment done. It's a quiet golfing month, as we've already said. It's like, yeah, let's go and find a few places and do a few course diaries. Delamere was one recently. And the course with the highest number of votes was Church Stretton.
Yeah, and which is a strange one, really, because it's not one that most people have heard of, really. It's not highly up on the radar, but our world community
is, and seen it. I mean, it's another one of those kind of cliff top dramatic.
There's something going on outside here. We don't usually get this in the biscuit mill. What's going on outside?
What a bizarre noise.
Someone gone out with a tannoy just blasting stuff out here. This can't be a permanent pod location. We must sort this out. But continue, Church Stretton.
Well, you know, just I knew it was one of these sort of dramatic courses.
Is it like, you know, I've heard it being compared to Cleve Hill. I've heard it being compared to Kington. I don't think you've played Kington.
From the same ilk. It's quite hard to summarise these courses into one sort of theme, but we'll sort of probably try and do that through the course of the pod. I think if you go around that sort of Shropshire, Cotswoldy sort of trail that hooks round from the sort of west side of the Midlands round to the sort of south, you have these brilliant sort of hills and terrain where, for some unknown reason, back in, you know, the late 1800s, the early 1900s, people took it upon themselves to establish a golf course. The land is incredibly complicated to try and figure out a golf course, but it's so dramatic and it's so picturesque that you're kind of really glad they did. But you must think that, you know, it was the path of most resistance to build Church Stretton Golf Club where they built Church Stretton Golf Club.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the land inland in the UK doesn't really lend itself phenomenally to golf with parkland stuff. But what they've managed to do around this sort of Shropshire border, same as the Gloucestershire with Painswick and Cleve, and is they've found some sandstone or chalk base usually, and usually put them pretty high up.
Yeah, it's good land. So look,
is how they're trying to go around it, really, isn't
it? Yeah, so
get them to drain.
I mean, look, there's actually quite a little bit of provenance to Church Stretton, which is, like, a lot of people definitely wouldn't know that. There's unmistakable charm to the course, but Jack Morris was the person who laid out the first nine holes with the help of the local professional. Now, who is Jack Morris? Well, Jack Morris is none other than the nephew of old Tom Morris, and he was the professional at Royal Liverpool, Hoylake. So, you know, this is 1898. This is like 30 plus years since Hoylake had been sort of established. You know, he'd been around the game for a long time. I guess kind of explains that desire to go and seek out well-draining land. So there's this sort of initial nine-hole routing that gets developed. There's, you know, the typical exhibition match to sort of mark the opening of the course. It turns out that was played by Taylor and Varden. And then 6 years later, the second nine is then built, and then you've kind of wind the clock on another sort of 20 or 30 years, and then the great revisionist James Braid comes and sort of tidies the whole thing up. So over the course of this sort of 30 years, the holes and the routing and everything develop around it. So yeah, look, it's a brilliant place. I had so much fun. There's so much to talk about and try and pick through here. I feel like I want to start with the guys I played with, if I'm honest.
Yeah. So you had some people reach out to you and say that, why don't you come and play with us? And some interesting characters, I'd say.
Yeah, well, loads of people said, go and play Church Stretton. I was like, well, I'm already sold. I know this place is like quite easily drivable from within the Midlands. It's just a perfect spot that I want to go and play golf. One of the guys I was messaging with said, look, you know, be great to play. I'm away in Ireland. But funnily enough, I'm quite pally with a guy called James Taylor. And, you know, he loves playing golf. He's over there all the time. He'd love to host you. You might know him. He's a cricketer.
Not the country singer.
Not the country singer.
Yeah, that would have been a good podcast.
Another great James Taylor, yeah. By the way. I mean, I'm a big James Taylor fan. James Taylor's fans.
Plural.
Don't know how you...
I haven't met a James Taylor I don't like yet.
How would you work the plurals on that? So if you're fans of two James Taylors,
James
I'm
Taylor's.
A big fan of James Taylor's apostrophe afterwards.
Yeah. Like, I think of it, if it was like Bruce Fitzpatrick, you'd say I'm a big fan of Bruce Fitzpatrick's. If they were two,
but that would
them.
Be individual.
I mean, luckily there's only one of them.
But. It's weird, though, isn't it? We digress.
Yeah,
James Taylor. For anyone who knows a little bit about cricket, James Taylor was an outstanding cricketer. Played red ball and white ball cricket, one day test match stuff for, at a national level for England. Really, really promising talent. A great record. You know, brilliant career that was very sadly cut short. So he had. He was diagnosed with a sort of a heart condition, very similar to, you remember Fabrice Muamba?
Yeah.
So,
but fill that story in for people that don't know that.
So Fabrice Muamba, I think, was the football player who basically sort of fell to the ground and had a
mid-match
sudden heart, incredibly rare, but incredibly serious. The upshot is any form of strenuous exercise, you're in mortal danger at any given moment. So he knew nothing about this. And, you know, I think that whole period of his life must, you know, it's an incredible sort of story. And there's quite a few interviews with James talking about it. And I'd encourage people to search that out. But, you know, he then never played golf up to that point. He had to retire from the game of cricket. And then I think kind of somewhat begrudgingly, it seemed at the time, took up golf. And like all good sportsmen, just like once the bit's between your teeth, you just don't give up. It's like,
yeah,
I want to be the best at this.
Well, we've got a cricketer who plays top-level cricket at Blackwell. I won't mention his name in case he doesn't want me to. But I was playing with him the other day and said, do a lot of cricketers play golf? And he said, actually, it's rare if you find a cricketer that doesn't play golf, because it's kind of those skills translate quite well. They kind of obviously very competitive.
Yeah, it's a weird one, cricket. Like that, like you said, there's a huge natural progression. The big difference is obviously it's a stationary object versus a moving object, and it's.
Well, he was saying in his golf swing, he finds it quite difficult not to really get ahead of the ball, because, like, if you think in cricket, you kind of step into the ball
and you're leading through with the arm,
and you're kind of really trying to attack the ball, and you get ahead of it. Yeah. Whereas that's his tendency, because he's a batsman. That's his tendency to try and get ahead of it. And he can lose a few, but when,
and you play with the face open quite a lot in cricket, I think, well, if you bat. I mean, I played a bit at schoolboy.
You can melt the ball, I'll tell you.
In
that.
The summer when you were doing, yeah, totally. But you know, I always found, like, in the summers when I played a lot of cricket and golf at the same time, I'd be hitting, you know, cuts for fun, like, because you'd just get your bat with the face open. And anyway, look, James Taylor has gone from essentially never playing the game to he's playing off +3 now. In a remarkable space of time, we're talking like 5-6 years here. Totally and utterly obsessed with the game, and a really, really good guy.
But he
guy.
Doesn't play his golf at Church Stratton.
No, he plays over in Nottingham, which is where he lives. I played with James and his brother-in-law, Cam. Cam's an outrageously good bloke. So Cam's a member at Church Stratton. He's like Mr. Church Stratton. So we had a sort of an afternoon there, the three of us, which was just cripplingly hot. This is back to the point of why September golf is better, because, I mean, you can have too much of a good thing in this country. It was so hot.
I'd say half of September was hotter than the sun.
Half of July.
Half of August.
Half of August. Yeah, it was cripplingly hot. And the course was baked out and everything. Cam turns up in this massive pickup truck and he's like, can't wait to get going. You boys got some water. And you're looking at this huge, like, landscape you're going to have to sort of traverse to get your way around, and I thought, that's a really good idea. I'd already shoveled factor 50 all over myself and headed out with, I think, 500 mil of water on board, which was like, it was akin to taking a knife to a gunfight, basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, because, I mean, we don't want to digress too far away from the golf course itself, but with James, it's clear that as it is for many people, that golf has become a tool basically to overcome issues in his life, and he's just a tremendously interesting bloke on his own. But let's not move away from the course itself, because we do need to address the course.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, but look, you know, I can't stress enough how much fun I had with Cam and James. They're just outstanding guys. Cam's brilliant, lives around the corner, plays a ton. I mean, the vibe at Church Stratton is just really relaxed. This is not a...
Is it quite wide open, or is it quite...
Let's do the course, because a few things I want to circle back on, because I think the club culture is worth talking about there. That felt really special. And some of the other bits. Let's just talk about the course for a minute. So there are, I can't think of any other course in the world that you start with three par threes.
What, in a row?
Yeah.
Do you actually?
Yeah.
Are they all uphill?
Three's like a lung-busting walk to get to the tee, but it's kind of flattish.
It's like a mountain course, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of cliff-top. Greens are sort of stitched into these areas. You've got that feature where you have the severe runoffs and the severe banks that border the higher and lower side of the greens, where they've obviously shoveled earth and then just tipped the scrap up to the side
to create
these runoffs, which I actually think is a brilliant feature. I mean, architecturally, you don't see much of it in a lot of courses.
Outside because it's the Cotswolds.
Yeah, because it's just not needed. But, I mean, the hills are... I mean, it is a lung-busting course.
These mountain hill clifftop courses, whatever you call them, they tend to, the first few holes are always invariably uphill to get you to where you need to go, because they always for some reason put the clubhouse on the lowest point they physically could.
You drive up this ridiculous, it's like a miniature Swiss road that you sort of snake up to get to this clubhouse. You've already done the clutching on the car just trying to get to the car park, to be honest with you. But it's a brilliant little charming building and a little practice net that sits by the first tee. Now the first hole is without doubt one of the most chronically difficult golf holes I've ever played.
What is it? It's par three.
It's about a 165-yard par three. The land is relatively flat in front of you, but then it goes, the green sits up, I'm going to say, 30 feet minimum on a sheer bank. So you play over what looks like flat ground, but then the ball has still got to carry over this huge 30-foot kind of ascent where it then sits on top. Now, we're playing in this height of summer, so the course is absolutely baked and firm. You almost cannot stop a ball on top of this green, because then...
What happens if you go along?
Just disappears back down another ravine over the top, over the back of it.
So there's no backstop.
So you've got this huge hill left of the green, long as well. So that's actually quite a good natural backstop. And the green's orientated in a sort of a front right to back left direction. So the carry's slightly shorter right, but you just cannot miss right. And this is your first shot of the day. You've got 165... I mean, James had this laser thing, and he had it with slope assist on. And I still couldn't understand how he was explaining yardages to me, but he was like, "Yeah, this is like a 190 shot." So I was like, "Okay, well, I'm gonna have to hit 5-iron at this." And quite intimidating when you look at this and you think, unless I get this absolutely on the money, high struck, you're not going to sit on the green. And I think I did about three laps of that green before I even got putter in my hand.
Sounds like you want to play a 175-yard bump and run.
Yeah, you just wouldn't get up the hill. You couldn't putt up the hill. You couldn't do anything. Is it
a layup and then a wedge? Is that probably the best way?
No, you just got to hit a really good long iron into the green. So that's hole one.
I'm going to throw out there.
I know this is going to be a long podcast. It feels like, but I think it's worth it because there's so much to this.
It's nice to talk anyway. I like the sound of my own voice. I'm personally not a fan because we travel quite a lot, and I think it's a Blackwell thing that you never hit a ball before you hit the first tee shot. Never. So you might have a putt. That's it.
Yeah, it's like this practices for wimps type mentality.
Which is absolutely atrocious, and I know that. But because of that I hate hitting an iron off the first tee.
Yeah.
I hate it. Like, I want to see as much club face as I can on the first one there, because I haven't hit the ball yet. So, I'm not a massive fan of pulling irons.
There's a couple of good par three openers.
Like Lytham. You know, Lytham's...
It's like the first tee shot at Prestwick, where you know you've got to hit a long iron down there, and it's just not the club you want to be hitting, and it's not a long golf hole, and it is quite forgiving, but it's just forcing you to do something that feels quite counterintuitive.
Well, as someone who's got the Al Hazels in the locker as well, I mean, just looking down with something with a hosel, like, you're like, I don't really want to hit this.
Oh, you're totally stuffed if you shank it off the first tee. Just straight, you are totally stuffed. But I mean, I think that applies to 99% of golf shots if you shank it. I mean, we're getting really sidetracked on one, but you can sense immediately it's like, yeah, I get it.
Hardest
like,
golf hole on the planet.
You just know you're playing somewhere that day that is going to live in
Would
your
you
memory.
Say it's a volcano green.
It's an outrageous volcano green. I mean, it really is perched up incredibly high. I think it's quite hard for photos or anything, and we'll have to go over there with a drone. I I committed you to that.
Oh, brilliant.
But we've got to go and play it again. It's so good. It's like a way better version of like a sort of a Prestwick, a Painswick for some of the quirk value. It's a little bit more refined. Yeah, there's the features are as provocative, but it plays as a fairer challenge, if that makes sense. It doesn't feel quite as just totally prohibitive to play.
I'm going to push back on Painswick there, because that quirk value was through the roof. And also, if we'd have respected Painswick, I think it could have been fair. We just chose not to respect it and got absolutely kicked around because of it.
So look, I'm going to move us on. One is just this outrageous one. Then two is equally as outrageous. Probably the T to green elevation is equivalent to one again. Playing about 130 wedge, you've got this sort of mounding on the left, then mounding on the right a bit longer, and the green's perched over that lovely little green. You've kind of got to let it fall in from the right. Beautiful wedge shot up there. Again, it's one of those sort of thrilling blind shots. You know, again, you're like, crikey, this is really crazy. And then you come off that and you walk across and you get to look over the 18th hole that comes in, which is this par three again to finish. Which plays down this little sort of corridor of a ravine. And three then is perched up right on the edge of this little peninsula of this little rocky outcrop. And you play the final par three then over, you know, what is probably about 170 yards from memory to a green. You can actually, for the first time, you can see the bottom of the flag, albeit only just. It's the first time you've got a glimpse of the bottom of the hole from a shot you're playing. And that completes like the opening trifecta of madness at Church Stretton.
But I find with places like that, especially if you don't play your golf there regularly, that's really endearing.
Yeah, it's just experiential, isn't it? Like, I mean, you know, if you're turning up trying to play card and pencil golf at Church Stretton the first time you've looked at it,
WHS
didn't see that round. No, that day. But wouldn't it just totally ruin the experience? Because, you know, the whole thing is like you're taking it all in, and the views are just staggering. But there are aspects that it's not just, this is where I'm saying it's not just kind of quirk for quirk's sake. The architectural merits of the golf holes are incredibly strong. So there's holes like four, which are, you know, mind-blowingly good par four, like crazy, crazy good. You sort of horseshoe around this huge deep ravine, which has got just ferns everywhere. Like you're just dead. You can't go in there. Like it's game over, but you can bail out left and you just want to bob something like 220, 230 down there. Now the more you hug the right hand side.
I like then, how you say bob. Most people's drives, average players' drives, like 230. Yeah, but ball strikers like yourself.
No. Well, it was very firm anyway. So it was all running down there. You could probably hit a lot more in the winter, to be fair, but the more you hug the right, you play this second shot where it's like this fern stuff sort of comes right in and across the par four. So you've pretty much got to go over it with your second shot. And then the green kind of is up, perched up the top, sort of in one of those Cotswold style greens where it's stitched into the hill. Now, if you're playing it from the far left, you've got to play across the angle. And that means the ball is much more likely to be rejected. So you've got a lot of safety left off the tee, but you're still going to be hitting like a 6-iron in or a 7-iron in or something. You're going to be hitting a decent amount of club into this green. If you're playing across the angle, you know what happens. The ball it's rejected. It's 50 yards. It's down the hill. Like you're fighting for five. If you're playing from the tight right, which is the sort of, that's the more tricky driver line, you're playing up the hill where you've got straight hill looking back at you. So it's not going to be rejected. It's just going to be killed into the face of the slope. Very, very clever hole. Really, really good. And then that's where the whole course then starts to open up and you start to see everything around. And you've got, you know, these huge hills over in Shropshire which kind of define the land. But then you've got massive long basins as well. It's quite a remote part of the world. It's just a really remote place. It's not for somewhere that's quite central to England. It's just really rural.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that around there, isn't there? I think it's too hilly for anyone to bother to build on, so they just kind of ignored it and worked around it.
But not all of it's that hilly, you know. You like, you, when you're up there, you look at it and go, Christ, yeah, those are like really big mountains and sort of hills. And then you've just got miles of just flat land.
So what else have we got in terms of standout holes? What else really caught your eye?
I'd say the standout hole for me was 8th Kop.
Is it one of those that's got named holes as well?
Yeah, it's got named holes as well, like some old school. But it's a historic golf club. There's no getting away from this. This is not 8th is a fairly sort of, it's a short par 4. I mean, with the firm ground, I think I hit 4-iron at it. You know, a lot of the golf holes
to the green.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the golf holes at Church Stretton are really drivable. Very few of them you're hitting anything that's remotely long into them.
It sounds like the defense is the greens, though, not the...
Yeah, definitely. And the land. The land's the really big defense. You know, you've got huge slopes and runoffs everywhere. So, you know, and when it's firm, the ball's just getting rejected in every angle. So it's playing like hyper-linksy, but we're in that drought. But, you know, you get the sense it plays pretty firm most of the time anyway. 8's this little short par 4. Stunning. You know, the infinity behind the green is like off into the hills where you can just see absolutely, you know, everything in the landscape, but no golf. It all falls down to the right. You've got a little bit of safety left, but you know, you've got it. You can kind of go at the pin and really take this on as a par 4. If you get it a hair wrong, you're going to make 6. You can quite easily hit your 6 or 7 iron up the left and probably get quite a sort of straightforward 2-putt. If you look at the 18th hole at North Berwick, it's a little bit like that. You can go okay, all out and sort of go, yeah, do you know what? I'm going to try and get close to this and attack the golf hole and make a, dare I say, a 2 or a 3. Or you can probably have ultimate comfort with up the left and hit a little bump and run and make a 3 or 4.
Is it the 5th at Deal, that sort of thing? It's 5th or 6th?
6th at Deal. Yeah, I mean, no, it's not. It's nowhere near as dogleg as that. It's like that's really not on off the tee, whereas this one is almost certainly
George Donahue.
Yeah, but I mean, he's like 300 carry and there's no miss. But this is totally on, and it's, you know, it's accessible. Like most golfers are going to get round this place. It's not hideously penal. But there are just certain spots where you cannot miss.
Cool. So we got the 8th and the back 9. What tickled your fancy?
Back 9, you kind of get right out there. So you look over. There's these huge gorges over the back side of the course. So the front side
is an old quarry site, kind of.
Yeah, huge quarries out there. You know, again, it was that hot evening. You could see people out in the distance, like sort of skinny dipping in the quarries and stuff.
Is it common land? Like a lot of these are common land. These hilltop ones where you get a lot of.
Yeah, you've got pasture animals out there. You've got all that sort of stuff. You've got electric fences around some of the greens.
Okay.
You've got a lot of that stuff going on. You've just got brilliant golf holes, like 10's great par 4 over, you know, right to the very edge. 11 you pay back. You play a par 3. I want to say it's like 12, which, you know, you sort of play uphill to a green where it all sort of feeds off at the right. There's just crazy golf holes out there, just so many of them. I suppose it would be quite hard not to talk about the 15th hole if you were to pin me on one.
What's special about 15?
So 15 is a 321 yard par 4. I put it in the greenside left trap with a 6-iron.
Okay. Did you make birdie?
No, absolutely not. I think I made 5 in the end.
Okay.
I think I made 5.
So is it downhill? Is that, or you just smoked it?
No, it's uphill. No, it was, so the 15th, you're on this, like, you kind of know that you're on the 5th. You know you're getting towards the end of the course, but you know you're nowhere near the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that feeling?
Yeah, well, it's like I said earlier on, though, you find with these old cliff top, hilltop, mountain top, courses, the first few holes are always mega uphill,
but you've got to get
because
back
of that. The last few holes are always like, here we go, boys. It's like,
Well, that's the thing. And I think when you get to 15, you realise that you've spent most of the back nine and you haven't really lost any elevation, because from, I would say, like the sixth or so, you've reached a quite a high level and you stick around that for a good nine holes. You're not plunging up and down the hills at quite the same magnitude. You know, nine's a big climb, to be fair, up the hill, but there's a few big walks. But you haven't lost any elevation and you're starting to realise, I've got four holes left. I've got to get down this hill somehow. Like, I'm going to have to hit some big shots downhill. 15, you sort of play out. The hole falls immediately down to the left. There's like netting up behind the 16th tee because clearly you can blow your drive and then it'll just careening into the 16th tee where people can stand. It's totally blind. And once the ball has kind of summited up on the hill and down to the left, it doesn't matter what time of the year it is. Gravity is taking that thing down the hill for you.
Yeah.
So it's the yardage is totally irrelevant. You've got to get the right line. It's a thrilling golf shot. It's anything but fair. It's just a case of picking the right line. You play there regularly. You're going to know roughly what to hit and what sort of line to take. And the ball just tumbles and tumbles all the way down to the green.
With a hole like that, from how you described it as well, like, that bunker might have been your friend. It could have been like that six iron was going out the back and gone. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
You got no idea, really.
And the green all running away, and it's really tricky around the greens because of all that stuff we talked about with the runoffs and these little steep edges off where they've stitched
the
greens.
They tend to be steep, but then they mow them really well, so it's steep and tight lines as well. So, and like you think, oh, I could putt this, but actually I'm not a very good putter from 7-8 feet under the green. Under the green or above the green.
And also, it's not quite like 100% like sort of fescue linkside turf where it's firm and baked out and tightly mown, but it's rock hard underneath. So you get the bounce.
Yeah.
It's always got that little sponginess
to
it.
Give, yeah.
So if you go in with a wedge, you can easily just dunch it.
Yeah. You know? And I also think you get a tiny bit more of like a nappy grass up on the hills up there. It's not as, it's not as... I'm no agronomist, man, but yeah.
No, I mean,
a bit nappier.
And then you kind of then play 16, great par three. It sort of goes right out into the corner. 17, another little sort of par four, rolls away and down to the green. And then you sort of walk back around past the third tee and play the 18th. And the 18th is this, you know, crazy little thing. If it wasn't for this hollowed out bit at the bottom, you could kind of putt it down to the green. It's like the is the 15th we played at Gullen 3. It's a, you know, you could,
yeah, 15th, it's 15th or 16th at Gullen 3. Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
it's 178 yards or something.
Yeah, so this is 174 yards. Yeah, we all hit wedge in there, you know. It's not you know, so you're plunging down at least 60 feet of elevation change again. It's crazy, but who doesn't like a par three that plays hideously downhill to a pin that you can see? It's ultimate fun.
Bit like Applebee's fifth or sixth, whatever it was. Like just hideously downhill.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like unfairly downhill. Like,
But I mean, and that kind of then closes it out, and you just come off the course and think like, wow, like there's none of the holes are forgettable. It's totally sustainable golf. Like, you know, you've got the land's been looked after by the animals. You know, you've got a very, very modest complement of green,
20 greenkeepers.
No.
But they can get away with it around these places, can't they?
Yeah. I mean, the land's superb for it. Now, I mean, and there's a few characters there. I mean, it became quite obvious. I met James, who's the club professional there, briefly when I got there. And I think I was about 20 minutes before James and Cam. And, I walked in, I tried to snare a Logo golf ball. It was, it always felt like it was on the cusp of one of those places that would stock Logo golf balls, which was sad news. And I ended up buying a ball marker instead. But I said, oh, hi, James, there's no one else there. Like, the course is empty. Clubhouse was shut. I thought, crikey, it's 4 o'clock. Like, surely the clubhouse is opening here. And he goes, oh, yeah, you're doing something to do with the internet, aren't you? I was like, that'll do.
Yeah.
I had a nice chat with him. What a great guy. But then it was only when I was playing and Cam was telling me, and he was like, yeah, like, James is like Mr. Church Stretton. He just does everything. I think it was his daughter or something that worked behind the bar there. He was a really unassuming guy, lovely bloke, but you know, everyone that I spoke to, because I ended up having dinner with a load of the members that play like this little evening sort of Thursday evening series or whatever they do. And there, you could just tell that, you know, James was the guy. He was like, without James, this place just wouldn't be, you know, I'm sure it would exist, but it wouldn't exist in anything like the same guys. And yeah, it was quite nice to hear that, really, because you think, you know, there must be a lot of people like James up and down the country who just make these sort of places so memorable and so great. Because
sounds like a film we should do, really, The Unsung Heroes.
Yeah, the
man honesty boxes and stuff like that.
100% sort of James Morey. Like, he's obviously a huge advocate for the club. And then back to the point of where I said the clubhouse was shut. It then kind of, the guys that are playing behind us were all playing this little series they do. I think it's like on a Thursday evening. It kind of goes with the light. So in the peak summer months, they play 18 holes. But as the sunlight starts to wane, the number of holes they play comes down. So they end up sort of playing, starts on like 9 holes. And then it goes up to like 12 and 14 and 16 and 18 for a bit. Oh, and nice. It runs over the whole thing. And I think Cam was leading. It's like the FedEx Cup or whatever. So he was like leading the order of merit, I think, for a while. Don't think he was after the Thursday I played with him. I think he had a trickier day with the long sticks. But had dinner with a few of these guys. Like, portions for dinner were just biblical.
Was it in the clubhouse?
Yeah, like, we'd sat out on the veranda. Oh, I mean,
so they opened the clubhouse back up?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like the clubhouse is basically shut until 5-6 o'clock when everyone's coming in.
Oh, right.
And then you've got like ham and eggs, pies, curries coming out. I mean, the chips were pretty much served in wheelbarrows. I mean, the portions, I don't know how much they eat in Shropshire, but it was...
The only important question, though, was there a coronation chicken on the menu?
No, there's no coronation. No, sandwiches were all plates of hot food.
Not big enough. Sorry, mate. There's not enough food in a sandwich.
It was a great clubhouse atmosphere. Like, tiny clubhouse room that you walk into, littered with honours
boards. But you
love
that, though, because it's clearly a building that services the members. Yeah. And that's what it's there for. Well, you know, I think sometimes clubhouses can lose themselves in what they're trying to be.
Well, I think we talked about it, didn't we, when we said, like, you know, Dunbar Clubhouse, and they've got this money to build a new clubhouse. And I think the club are really excited about it. But I love Dunbar's clubhouse because it's like your nan's front room almost. It's got like the curtain.
They're not going to love hearing that.
No, but it is. No, but there's a lot of charm to it. Like,
yeah,
there is.
I know what you mean.
That, you know, it's got like
snooker room.
It's got like the 30-year-old curtains that hang up. They've got flowers on, and the tables have got skirts and stuff. And it isn't what you'd put in place. But, you know, there's so many places that you build it, and it's like you've got to cover everything with glass, and everything's got to be clean and minimalistic.
It's easy to get homogenised. Same with golf courses, it's easy to homogenise them, and same with clubhouses when you're trying to be modern and stuff. And actually, a lot of these things are very cyclical. You could, you know, I think in 30 years' time, we'll look back and think, why did we think everyone wants to see us? Why do we put glass everywhere? So
yeah, like, and everything looks brick? The same. So going in there, it's just a really nice little clubhouse room that's really just like a little bar restaurant area. And then you've got this little terrace patio that looks right out and over the hillside and out right out the other side of Church Stretton, and, you know, comfortable wicker chairs and great beer, and the whole thing was just a delight. And they were just nice people, great guys to hang out with, banter's flying, and you were like, yeah, God, I mean, if you lived out that way, which actually you do, it's like, it's just a no-brainer
place to
hang out and stuff. I knew I was going to like it. I desperately want to go back.
We'll make a trip of it, because I need to see it anyway. If anyone wants to play this beauty, I suppose it's £150 a round, or?
No, obviously not. I think weekday at green fee is like 30 quid.
I think if you've got
an England Golf Union card or something like that? I think everything's half price, so 15 quid. You know, if you play on a weekend, it's 40. I read like they do at the moment, like green fee special, where you play for like 20 quid if you tee off before 10 o'clock on a Saturday. I mean, that's like the optimal time to play. That's ludicrous.
You want to play, it's like, if you want to drive your car in rush hour, we'll only charge you 50% on the petrol.
I mean, it's just crazy, isn't it, that people say, you know, golf's an inaccessible game when you can just literally go and play with 6 or 7 sticks and enjoy Church Stretton for 20 quid on a Saturday morning.
I mean, we don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but I think if you know where to look, it's plenty accessible. But yeah, if you're trying to do the most popular thing with the most expensive kit, then yeah, it is inaccessible. But
and I'd definitely like to play a bit more with Cam and James. I, you know, really enjoy the company.
How did your golf stack up to a plus three handicap?
James is long. James is quite long.
Of course he is. He was a pro cricketer.
Yeah, I mean, James hits it really good. I mean, he's a better golfer than me, isn't he?
That must have stung.
There's no getting away from that. I tried to goad him, to be fair. So on like eight, we didn't really... Three is such a... we should talk about this. Three is such a shit number to play in. Like, if you actually want to have... I like a little jewel, but you can't do anything with a three, can you? So it's like...
No, who wants three the, ball... Three ball... Oh. I don't think there's... we need to go on Instagram or on social media. We need to put this out there, but I'll let you do that. That's something I will allow you
to
do.
You'll allow me to do it.
Is we need to find out if anybody's got any good three ball formats, because they just suck. Like, there's no good. And split sixes or threes or 12s or whatever you call it is... That's just rubbish.
Like, yeah, I just don't... It's painful. It's always like no one ever gets into it.
No, it's just really hard. Like, two balls, fine. You just jazz match play. Maybe there's some cool three ball match play that I don't know about. Something cool I didn't know about.
I really wish there was.
Skins is probably the best thing you can do. But even with skins, like, you can play like garbage and just pick up all the dough, because... Yeah. It's just the way it is.
Well, Cammy was playing his own ball as well, so he had a card because he was in his order of merit thing.
Yeah.
I was pulling hard for him in that. And so me and James has sort of like gone out. James has got a newborn, I think, and he was like, you know, the excuses were coming out on the first tee. He was like, I'm not playing as much now. You know, I've kind of got really low, but now
well,
I'm not.
Well, he heard about your golf, clearly.
Yeah, he was terrified. And he's not playing sort of five times a week or whatever he was doing before. And we still get through six or seven holes. And he's like, yeah, like, it's nice. I quite like a match. I'm quite competitive. I said, well, if you want, we'll play a little level match on the back nine. We never actually did in the end. But I was quite up for going toe-to-toe with him on the back nine. I think it'd be good fun
to do
that.
Would you take shots? Grown men don't take shots, do they?
I think I'd have played him level. And I'd have quite enjoyed losing. But he's a really tidy golfer. It's quite interesting looking at how someone like that approaches the game. Coming at it so late in life, where not later in life, but you know, it's like most plus three golfers have played for a lot longer, and they accumulate. Yeah. And I think
there's a lot more knowledge around, shot selection, perhaps, or just experience in getting the ball in the hole, as opposed to just being a great ball striker.
Every golfer,
a generational ball
striker.
Well,
no, but every golfer, every time they go on the course, they're accumulating knowledge about how to get the ball in the hole, and very often that is not by hitting better golf shots.
But I don't think
it's just by playing.
I don't think you get to be a professional, an elite professional sportsman, an international professional sportsman.
Yeah, I mean, he's like one of the greats.
Without being pretty good at just being able to adapt to that sort of
thing.
No,
but he's built that by, and I think he'd say by his own admission, by just working really hard at the technical aspects of golf. And to get the results that he's got from his game... without really accumulating a ton of like golfing IQ of just figuring it out, you know, like really good, you know, scratch players that have been around the game for 30, 40 years, like they can just have a really rancid day on ball striking and they'll just figure it out. You know, James hasn't got all that kind of 30, 40 years in the background to just lean on. So seeing how he attacks it is quite interesting because he gets it around really well.
But I also think, I mean, speaking as a non-low golfer, but I think if you're like three or below, certainly if you scratch or below, you just have to have a really hot short game. There's no way around it. You just need to be able to get up and down fun.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just can't maintain it. You're not going to hit every green. So you got to have, if you're like scratch or below, like a blisteringly good short game. And that's really hard to learn. This
Definitely.
Is a huge digression of what we're...
No. It's interesting. I think, you know, you have got it. And it's, and they're also different. They're all such different disciplines, aren't they? And it's, you know, to do any one of those at an elite level in the space he's done it, it's difficult to do it all and be able to, you know, have a really, you know, fully packaged golf game is... And therefore, his technique's tight. Like everything looks good. It looks like, you know, if you just drop kicked him through, a really, you know, like a an intensive program on, you know, how you play the game at a technical level, that's what you'd get. Like you just, and there's obviously a mindset there with an elite sportsman around how they apply themselves to these things and work at it. It's just a fascinating little offshoot. But Cammy also, just what a guy. Like, I mean, as a member up there and just like, you know, living locally and stuff, and you could see the endless afternoons you'd have up there, just the fun and yeah, I just really enjoyed both.
What's quite nice about these places on hilltops as well is that you can drive up there, have a few fresheners and just roll back down the hill.
Yeah.
You don't even have to, just literally pencil roll down.
Exactly.
Just no problem at all.
But it's a really nice place, Church Stretton. Like, I'd never been to the town. You drive through, it's lovely. Like, there's, you know, all this nice stuff going on.
But yet another glowing endorsement of another kind of unsung or underrated or just lesser known golf club. And I suppose the upshot for a lot of these things that we do is that I think many people, including us, to be fair, can get too fixated on the courses you've heard of and the courses you know, and just to take a recommendation every now and again is, if someone's recommending it to you, it's probably worth going and see. So something that we highly suggest that our listeners do more often.
Yeah, totally. And I think anyone could just pull the trigger and head up there. I think I didn't get the sense this place is heaving every day of the week, but yeah, you could go there. You could even go there on sketchy weather and just be like, do you know what? If the weather turns on me, there's opportunities to loop back to the house. You're out there. It feels like you're out there and quite exposed. That's the only thing I'll say. Like, we played it on a quite still day.
You wouldn't want lightning to come.
I mean, you'd be dead. You'd just be dead. But if you got out there and the weather really turned, I can imagine it would feel like a slightly less tranquil experience. We had very little wind. And it was actually uncomfortably hot, to be fair. It was well north of 30, even in the evening. But you get it on the wind, it's going to be a terrifyingly difficult challenge, course. Yeah. Like, terrifyingly difficult.
Changes the dynamics completely.
Yeah, but there's so many of the par fours are reachable. So many of them, you don't need anything more than a 2-iron to get near, actually. It really is, you know, and it feels like a soundtrack to the podcast, but because we play a lot of these types of courses and enjoy them, you know, it is a match play course again. It is not a card and pencil job.
When they were designed, I find it interesting. I don't want to bring up Liv and stuff, but this a few months back, maybe 6 weeks back, John Rahm was asked about Liv and he said, you know, I want to play 72 hole stroke play, a format they've been playing for hundreds of years. I'm like, dude. Like, 72-hole stroke play was brought in like the 40s and 50s. Like, before that, it was match play. That's all they did. And all these courses were designed when all they did was match play.
So exactly. So
most of these courses that were designed back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, were designed to go, you know, play a match and have fun. But
well, it's been a pleasure doing that with you. I'm looking forward to the day that I can interview you about a golf course you've played.
I've got a few in the locker. We could go back in history and do a couple out.
Well, we're going to try and do a few more of these course diaries. We enjoy doing them. They're good fun. We hope you guys enjoy listening to them. But until next time.
Adios. Watch this.